microphones are hot, and we are back at Legends Mania, the Tag Team Convention. Fast Eddie Lane on this side of the control panel.
Mark Mabo Bowman.
Legends Mania, this has been a party, a two-day event beyond compare. And beyond compare, ladies and gentlemen, the gentleman that we have at the table at this time, also very much beyond compare, the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff, live on Beyond Ringside. Mr. Koloff, it is a pleasure to have you on board. Thank you for taking the time to come on with us.
Well, my pleasure, comrades. It's always a pleasure.
We are talking about a man who has been around the world more times than I've got active brain cells, more than likely. You have a former Worldwide Wrestling Federation champion, mm-hmm. World Tag Team Champion with the National Wrestling Alliance.
Yes, sir.
Six-man Tag Team Champion. Of course, Nikita was here just a little while ago. Crusher Khrushchev was here just a little while ago. Mm-hmm. So it was like we're to sit over and watch the three of you in communication with each other, just sitting back, hanging back, talking. I'm sitting back going, this is Christmas. I mean, all over again. And to have you here on our show, it is an honor, sir. But let me go ahead. I'm going to go straight into the six-man situation for a little while ago. And you held the six-man title and took that to a level to where it paralleled that of the World Tag Team title. There was just as much buzz about that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people said it was because of the personality traits that the three of you put forward, not necessarily the Russian versus American sentiment. It's just the fact that you sold it so eloquently and so well that you elevated a title which would be classified as a secondary belt to main event status.
I believe that's right, because I think not just to go back to the nationality type thing, but the people always like to get with their team or with mm-hmm. their favorite, and I believe that this is the case here, and that's what made the trophy so important, the significance of who had it, you know, and whenever you got some foreign guys, of course, looked at as being hated, you know, and the American people especially would look at that as a challenge for the American teams to take it back, the Freebirds, or whether it be the Road Warriors, or just whatever team that was out there, and it made it more interesting. And I know what you mean. I think it was a great idea. It was actually Jim Crockett's idea to have that six-man type of thing. He had it with a trophy at first, right? Mm-hmm. Then he converted it over to belts.
Right.
I really enjoyed that part of it. I think it added to the whole thing. I think you're right that the fans enjoyed that part of just the intrigue of who's going to end up having this trophy. And, of course, a few things added in there, like trying to smash it over somebody's head.
Now, look, how long would we be seated at this table if you were to go down the list of titles that you've held?
I never really counted them, but there's been several. I ended up being the Asian Tag Team Champions with Mad Dog Vachon in 1973 over in Japan, Canadian Championship twice, and, of course, WWF with Bruno. After that, I think it was the National Wrestling Alliance down here, and a lot of regional titles, UWF, I think, and organizations such as that, but I think it was five times tag team with the NWA,
mm-hmm.
and of course, like you mentioned, six-man tag a couple times, and TV belt, Mid-Atlantic belt, Mid-Atlantic tag team belt, Georgia tag team, Florida tag team, single matches, singles champion, and several of those. And at one time, they came up with a European belt that I had for a short period of time there, or at least I claimed to have, but because I wrestled a couple of European guys like Billy Robinson, that I figured that I had a few victories on him, so they probably had more than I had as far as victories, but I claimed that I had more, and it's made me the champion.
Now, Darren, a question that I really want to ask, and everybody has a different response, but in this particular case, I would really be interested to find your answer. What do you really consider the key to your longevity? I mean, because in this day and time, with everything as clustered as it is, you still always remember the name. You always know the name of the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff. You just say the word Russian Bear, and they know, and you know they're talking about you.
Isn't that something, really? It really is. It's, I think it's something that's really, I feel it's an honor that people look at that. And the side name, they call me Uncle, mm-hmm. you know, because of Nikita.
Right.
It's you know, I'll meet somebody and going out shopping or something like that, and say, Uncle Ivan, you know, they'll holler it out, like, you know, and you know what era that they watched me wrestle in right away was with Nikita, and I associated that. Of course, the Russian Bear, I got that tag probably with the WWF, and that always held, but more of a, I think the big thing was with Nikita, I think, as later on after, of course, Bruno Sammartino and the right. WWF that really made a big significance in my career.
Now, out of all of the storylines that you've been a part of, all of the programs, all of the feuds, I know that it would be impossible to just pull one right off the top of your head and say that is my absolute favorite. But what are the ones that actually stick out in your mind more than anything else? Because with all, like I said, with all of the different programs you've worked against so many different competitors and so many different companies, I mean, if you were to pull just say two or three off the top of your head, what do you think they would be?
Definitely Bruno Sammartino, because that's that thing with the belts up there, you know, the Jimmy Valiant, the ongoing thing. It was like we were married for about a year there, standing, trying that TV belt.
Right.
He just beat me every night, but it was after the bell rang. Ole Anderson and I with the tag teams in the Atlanta area, Georgia area.
Right.
Dusty Rhodes, I ran into him all over, from Montreal in 68 to Florida, to Georgia the Championship, Texas, Houston, here in the North Carolina area. We always struck it off, I think. See, I respect the fact that he was not only a talent in the ring, but the office really admired his knowledge of promotion, booking type of thing. So.
Yeah, because I remember watching the episodes of World Championship Wrestling Live from, I would say, 85 up. To when they came out of the Techwood Studios as far as the taping goes. And that was a place that I'd actually been to a couple of times during the tapings. And it's just like, yeah, it was a small venue. But I think that, you know, a lot of people like to talk about the Southern style of wrestling and Southern wrestling. I think because of the fact that the TBS studios were as small as they were and you could only get so many people in there. Mm-hmm. And of course, you had so many diehard fans who would be there for every taping. A certain group would always be there. I mean, and I had the privilege of sitting in on a few of them when I just lucked up and got there at the right time. But it's that intimacy that is there during those tapings that carried through to the live appearances where people felt like they knew you a little bit better than where it's like today you're taping in 18, 20,000 seat arenas. And it's just like you almost feel like not even a face in the crowd.
Yeah.
But in your case, you know, you come out and it's like, even if you're not, you made it fashionable to cheer heels.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that. And also, one of the things that I've really wanted to come back on, I think you were the premier definition of the term player coach in professional wrestling, because you advised Nikita, you advised Crusher Khrushchev, you advised Vladimir Pietrov. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, you were also physically in the heart of the storyline yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So where you took that to an entirely different level, and a lot of people in this industry haven't really been able to see that.
Yeah,
but that was something that always stood out to me, because you were there. You were not only behind the microphone talking up for them, not as you were putting them over more than you were yourself on the microphone. But when it when it came time to get in the ring, the time for talking was done, and you were right there in the middle of everything.
Yeah, I knew where my bread was buttered. Was the idea that it was to my advantage to you know, that was my part in the role to end up making like a guy like Nikita. And really, that's what wrestling was back then, even if you're against your opponent. If you end up going in there and you make your opponent look bad, you're not going to draw no money the next show, right?
Right.
It's the idea that the people are going to say, well, the match wasn't good, and there's nothing to come back and see, because Kolov just dominated the guy. And more or less like a match you'd see on TV to promote myself to getting over, and then going into the arena doing the same thing. So you had to really be a technician as far as the way I took it. I didn't think myself of being have any brilliance. It was just the need, I think, to be able to keep going, keep telling the story. Like when Nikita came on board '83, I'd already been wrestling over 20 years.
Right.
So it was like a revival for my my career, and indeed by doing that, and it's like the adage that the Lord teaches in the good book. He says you got to give to receive, and basically that's what I was applying, not even knowing I was applying it, because I just wanted that paycheck myself. Realized I wasn't no giant or anything like that. I was just medium-sized guy, and I was fortunate enough to become a champion and be a main eventer, and I just wanted to stay there. So I knew I had to keep creating, whether it was my opponents or partners, to go against the opponents.
Yeah, and you had the uncanny ability to help, to basically get everybody over in that particular regard. I mean, because Piotrow never really said much, if any, on the microphone at any given point in time. Yeah. But yet, when it came time for him to move into the ring, you had the buildup in place for him already, mm-hmm. to where it's like they're expecting him to basically go in and just destroy whatever's in his path. And he backed up physically what you put over for him verbally on the microphone system.
Yeah, he's so intimidating looking, like, you know, like Nikita was when he first came out.
Yeah.
300 pounds, you know, and looked the part, you know, with the pecs and everything.
Yeah.
And the definition. And Vladimir was like that. But Vladimir had a little extra thing that you could see, that coldness behind him. He was, as it turned out, hung around with a gang as growing up, and he was indeed a tough man. Matter of fact, I seen it one time where Jim Crockett went to call him down, and all Vladimir did, didn't say one word. He just looked over at him, stared at him, and Jim's head dropped, and he walked away. He knew that this guy was nobody to fool with. And I think he had that type of fear on the opponents, even though the opponents knew that he was going to intentionally go out there and kill him. Although he was something like Nikita at the beginning, he wasn't polished, we call it.
Right.
So whatever he did, like a lot of people say, that Nikita knocked their heads off. And indeed, that's what he was doing. It was just from lack of not knowing how to do it without knocking their heads off.
Right.
You know, make it look like he was knocking their heads off.
Mark Mabel Bowman, come on, man.
Hey, Mark. I want to call you Uncle Ivan so bad. But I got to ask, you and Nikita and Crusher and later Vladimir, you guys were in, you had the gimmick during the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And I was just always, I've always wondered, even to this day, how much heat did you guys draw from the fans, especially being in the height of the Cold War, having, you know, the Russian gimmick? How bad did it get?
Real bad. I tell a couple stories in my book, and I don't include them all, but it was a type of thing that I was investigated by the FBI.
What?
They came down because I did say something on TBN, TBS at the time, we were wrestling out of Georgia Championship Wrestling, and it was on a Saturday, and on Monday we wrestled in Augusta, and I had said something about the upcoming celebration of Veterans Day.
Yeah.
And I said something to the effect that a lot of these Americans, they end up taking America for granted. They want to sit at home and let down their herd from fighting in the war just to collect the check. Oh, man, they got out. They said they had all kinds of calls and insisted that the government check me out. And they came down. I knew enough to bring my papers with me and make sure that, you know, that everything is cool, you know.
Wow.
I'm not from the Soviet. I'm a Canadian boy, you know.
But you play the part beautifully. Yes. Always have, and all. I mean, always have. Now, how long before you got into the industry were you a fan of the business?
Since I was about 8 years old, you know, I was raised without the luxuries of electricity and all this, TVs or anything. But 1950, my parents took us kids, 10 of us, over to a friend's place that had this, what they call a TV, a little box, black and white. They had wrestling in it, and that was the program that was on. It was dominating the air at the time. Everybody was watching wrestling. I remember guys like Gilio, DiPaolo, Yukon Eric, and some old names in the business.
Yeah.
And Gorgeous George, and I was saying, man, that's what I want to be one day. I was like 8 years old at the time, 1950. And that dream stuck there. I just ended up, as I got older, as things played itself out with being sidetracked a little bit with the other problems I got into, but finally going to the gym, working out real hard, gaining about 60 pounds in weight within 6 months. Started looking the part, and that they agreed to train me. And 6 months, a year from the time that I started the school, I started being a professional. I just turned 20 years old. And man, it was a dream come true for me. So that dream from 8 years old, you know, it was always there. And I tell people about it today, whether it's football, basketball. I talk, speak at prisons, try to encourage kids, where doing autographs and that, you know. you know, the dream is so important that you have to have a goal before you can accomplish a goal. And the idea, if you get a dream, you'll end up finding a way to accomplish it.
Very true. End up, you know, very true. Yeah. Mark.
Oh, it's, I mean, it's Ivan Koloff, man. Come on.
And I appreciate you, buddy.
Well, we appreciate you. We genuinely do. Now, you were making the reference to the training and being at that certain point. Who was instrumental in your training to go into the ring?
Back then, I had pretty well been trained by Jack Wentworth. It was a gym in Hamilton, Ontario, near Toronto. And there was one school at one end of town, the east end, that was Jack Wentworth. The other end of town was Al Spittles. Jack had a ring in it. The other guy had mats, so I went for Jack Wentworth. And it was indeed a good school. Guys like the Missing Link came out of there. The Tolis brothers around town about that time. Some old names in the business. Johnny Powers.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of some others. And I know Dr. Love was there. Remember that guy?
Mm-hmm. Vaguely.
Yeah. And he ended up passing away at a young age in a car wreck. But it was indeed a great experience to be able to go to a school and get some technical training like that. Although my training really came from the road, just being in the ring. You know, 15 minutes here, 20 minutes a match. Wrestling main event guys, like, you know, from the time I started around Toronto, I can remember some guys I wrestled with. And then going out to New Westminster, the British Columbia area, and wrestling as Fred McNulty, the McClarity brothers, wrestling against Abdullah the Butcher was starting about that time, Eric Froelich, Don Leo Jonathan.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some great names, Dutch Savage, and a bit. And I got this, and they took a liking to me because I was a humble young man, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't a loudmouth, and they see potential in me, I guess, because by this time I built up to around 300 pounds, and I was working out hard on the weights, and they said that, they felt that I had the potential to go places, so they'd get me aside in the dressing room after, they'd critique me, you know, now when you did that, you know, or be more aggressive here, or don't fail to talk, because I was a very introvert in the ring, or before I got in the ring as a child, shy, hide behind my mom and all this, so there's hope for you out there, folks that are like that, introvert that, because as you get older and you meet those challenges in life, there's nothing to stop you, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that you have a book. First of all, what all does it encompass?
It's an autobiography about myself, basically just trying to stick to myself. I see a lot of guys write books and they try to bring up situations with everybody else but themselves, you know, and I just try to keep it focused on, you know, my craziness, my meanness, my badness, and you know, in and out of the ring, and where it led me, and where it took me, and where I am at today because of some bad decisions, but yet turned around towards the end, some good decisions, you know, like becoming a born again Christian, for example, which led me to a ministry that I have today, Bear Witness for Christ Ministry, and it's something I'm very proud of, to be able to go out and even at shows like we just did Friday night in Laurel, South Carolina, have a chance to, George Sells and I, to, you know, have 5 minutes, 10 minutes with just testimonial to the people of our careers and where it took us, and the idea of the drugs and alcohol and being a bad decision, turning our life over to the Lord, and having the hope and desires today rekindled because of that. And for my case, like especially with the drugs and alcohol, it was really heavy down. I was to the point that buying the lie of the devil that, hey, it's okay to go and sell it now, make yours and get it free, you know, like a lot of young kids do. And that's what leads to carrying guns. And, and the kids relate to me because I can say I've been there, done that, you know, and not just coming out there saying, you know, do as I say, not as what I did, you know, and it's, that reaches home. So I'm very proud of the fact to be able to not only do that, to go to churches, like I'm going to speak at a church in Macon, Georgia tomorrow morning, but to be able to go to prisons. I'm ordained now to marry people, so I'm getting even with these American people now for booing Ivan Koloff.
There you go.
Now I will marry them.
You made their life hell inside the ring. Guess what? You get to carry that on when you get to when you trick them into saying I do, right?
Yeah, only kidding. Because no, I pray that they'd be blessed and have a very successful and beat the odds of a 60% divorce that they would be successful. And I really think by talking that way to people and them understanding that, you know, doesn't make you all that bad if you made a mistake. It only makes you bad if you don't ask the Lord for forgiveness. You know?
Exactly.
As long as you learn from the mistake and ask for forgiveness, that's a lot of people just honestly don't seem to get that, though.
That's right.
I mean, because in our day and time, everything is so niched. And it seems like I'm going to play with this one for a second. I'm going to shoot with this because it seems like to set forth the fact that you have traditional Christian values often is like putting a target on your chest. And I was taught that when I was growing up in the church and I was prepared. Now, I will never say I'm perfect. There was only one perfect Christian and we hung him on a cross.
That's right. Exactly.
And by the same token, when I put that out there that I do have Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, I'm ready to accept what people will say.
Right.
And no matter what, no matter what is said, no matter in what language it's said, how they use their language, and no matter in what tone, whether it's just inquisitive or spiteful, the one thing that I will always have more than anything else is my faith.
Exactly.
And that is something that I tell everybody to all the way through, because even there are so many different religions in the world, and there's going to be differences, ideological differences, and sometimes idiotic differences between between religions.
Yeah.
But in a sense, we all serve the same Lord, no matter who you call him or how you call him or her, because as long as you have your faith in the right place, you can't go wrong.
Yeah. In my thinking with the teachings of Christianity, I guess I'm break down the line on it. He says there's only one way to the Father, and that's through the Son. So
exactly.
In my thinking, there's only one, and I was raised in church, Roman Catholic, and I thought by going to church I was a Christian, and that doesn't make you a Christian by going to church. It's the idea of the relationship after you accept the gift of Jesus Christ. And I know what you mean about the idea of people being able to ridicule you. I have a shirt, matter of fact, I'm big into wearing Christian t-shirts. I have one that says, I'm not perfect, only forgiven.
Right.
And so many others, that strike with people. I have a lot of people say, oh, love your shirt. But there is some people that walk up like, Ivan Koloff, and then they look at the shirt and it's like, it's a testimony in itself. It's a witness in itself, because it proclaims this is what my belief is.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to talk to me, you accept that fact, or it's okay if you don't, but you know that's where I'm at. And I'd like you to be there too.
I mean, personally, I'm in a Methodist church, and I had a group from a Baptist church come to my door the other day. I was actually surprised and impressed, shocked, awed that there was still an outreach ministry being done in my area. I'd lived in the same neighborhood for 8 years and had never seen. I'll hold that thought. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons came through, the Jehovah's Witnesses had come through, but I'd never seen them. Methodist, Baptist, Catholic, Charismatic, Pentecostal. And I know that Catholics do come out every once in a while, because they always, in case they may miss somebody who's come out, it's like, we're here on behalf of the Catholic Church. Are you Catholic? And they'll ask, if I say no, I'm Methodist, it's like, oh, we'll still talk. And they'll be cordial, they'll be sociable, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
They just won't up and turn around and go bye bye.
Right.
But where I've seen some religions, some denominations do that. It's like, okay, gotta go, bye.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, you're here doing God. You're supposed to be doing God's work regardless, because one thing that one Christian can do is help to build up another Christian.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, regardless of what denomination you follow, once again, to me, it comes down to the fact that we're all supposed to lift each other up in the eyes of the Lord.
It's the name Christian means Christ-like. Right?
Exactly.
And if you there's only one Christ. If they try to make up, they say there's going to be hundreds, and there's already been a number of people claiming to be the Christ returned, but there's only one. And no matter how we interpret that fact, it's whether it's denominational, whether I just believe in Jesus Christ. Yeah. I went to the Roman Catholic Church as a kid because my mom and dad chose that. I was saved in the Assembly of God Church. I was baptized in the Baptist Church. I go to the Church of God Church, and I'll go to any one of them that believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. And, you know, maybe some interpretations of the Bible is a little bit different, but
right.
I'm not going to focus on that. It's the love of God that I want to focus on.
There you
because
go.
He loved me so much that he died for me, man. And that's a lot. You know, I can't imagine my going to my son and saying, hey, you got to die for these people, man. You know,
yeah.
So his love is above our love. His knowledge is above ours. His strength is above. He just.
Now, let me go ahead and ask, what is the name of the book? Let everybody.
Is That Wrestling Fake? By the Bare Facts by Ivan Koloff.
Okay.
You can get it through Crowbar Press.
That's Thank you.
Scott Teal. He's the author of the book.
Yeah. Scott was also one of the co-authors of one of the books about Gordon Solie.
Gordon Solie.
Yeah.
Ole Anderson, The Assassins.
Yep.
Dewey Robinson, The Missing Link.
Jody Hamilton's book, The Man Behind the Mask.
Yep.
Yeah. We actually we had Joe on the show with us last October. Tremendous time. He was great.
I think he's doing Tony Atlas's book also, too.
Really?
Yeah, he does a good job. Yeah.
Scott, good I need help with my book, dude. One of these days, I'll go for the book deal. No, I could never. I've read a lot of the books, and now that I know about where I can find yours, I'm definitely going to go check out Crowbar Press. And that's at crowbarpress.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. Now,
and that's my ministry. And, you know, so go to my site, ivankoloff.com. Click on to where the book is and order it straight through Crowbar Press that way if you want. But and my ministry, I've already mentioned what it consists of. So even buying an autograph picture helps ministry. And
okay.
I'm not so proud that I wouldn't ask for some help in that area, too.
Not a problem. But they can get the book through ivankoloff.com also.
Yeah, if you do just... I don't know anything about computers. My wife tells me all they do is go to the click on the button where it's
the button. I tell you what I will do is once we tear down here, I'm headed back for Birmingham. And I will get a chance to put a link to ivankoloff.com on our Friends of Beyond Ringside page at beyondringside.com.
Oh, thank you.
And I'll make sure that it carries straight through.
All right. Appreciate that.
Ladies and gentlemen, well, before I do it.
I got nothing. I'm about to
Just do me a favor. Tell you what, get it out of your system. Do you mind if he calls you Uncle Ivan one time?
Not at all.
Uncle Ivan!
My pleasure, guys.
Mr. Koloff, it is an honor. Thank you for taking the time to come on the show with us. Ladies and gentlemen, the Russian Bear, the one, the only Ivan Koloff on Beyond Ringside. Folks, we are going to go away for just a couple of seconds. We'll see you back on Beyond Ringside right after this. Don't blink.